Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is Wednesday. You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. And as Orion and Kim said, not too much going on Wall Street today. The Dow is down now 11 points and some change. S&P 500 down 6. The NASDAQ down 33. Terry Savage writes at terrysavage.com. You can watch her on Channel 9, read her in the Huffington Post. Listen to her every Wednesday here on the Business Lunch as well. And she joins us now. Terry, welcome to the program.
Tribune as well. You know, the Tribune syndicates my column around the country, and just in the last month or so, they started running it in the Monday business section of the Chicago Tribune.
Oh, nice.
You can see it in print again.
Yeah, yeah. I know they did. They revamped that Monday section, so good for you. That's good to know. I didn't realize that.
And that section goes around the country, so I get emails and posts on my Ask Terry blog from all around the country now. I find it fascinating.
And what do you mean all around the country now? You've been so all around the country for years.
Okay.
All right, so, I'm looking at Wall Street, you know, and I talked a little bit about this with John Najarian. We were more in the thick of it yesterday, waiting for this big reaction from Wall Street to the terrorism attack in Brussels. And, you know, I don't want to make little of it, but it was almost a yawn. There didn't seem to be this big sort of reaction that we might have had in years past. I'm just wondering, do you see that? And if you do, why do you think that is?
Yeah, you know, this is a very sad commentary. Not only did the stock markets not react, the euro itself, the currency, which is most involved in the site of most of these terrorist activities, has not reacted particularly. In Great Britain, they're talking about leaving the euro currency organization, and that gave more momentum to have Britain split apart. But basically, there hasn't been a reaction. The one market, and I think it's worth talking about, that you would look at when you see terrorist activities, with gold, and indeed, gold did shoot up yesterday dramatically, and it dropped today to its lowest level, spot gold, $1,215 an ounce this morning. The futures are just now at about $1,223 an ounce. And this might be an interesting opportunity, but gold, of course, is still up about 15-16% this year so far. It's had a great first couple of months. Mainly on the knowledge that every country is printing its currency, and there's general fears of maybe they'll finally get the inflation they've been trying to get. So gold has been a safe haven. Now, gold sold off today, and a lot of it has to do with reports that Venezuela, which is in great financial trouble, is selling its gold reserves to get the cash, keep the company going, the country going, I should say. So I'm going to just make a suggestion. Maybe it's time I reprint my column up about buying gold, whether you're buying gold mining shares or gold bullion coins. If we hold here above about $1,190 an ounce, I think this might be, for those of you who are not as a trading opportunity, and gold is speculative and it's volatile, but for those of you who are waiting to put a little bit of a hedge on against the dollar, this might be the time.
Well, and then you can sell your gold when it's time to pay off your kids' college expenses, maybe.
The question is, what's more valuable here, gold or a college education? That's a real tough point to make, seriously. You want your kid to be educated? What's that education buying these days?
Well, there's a study that came out from the Department of Education this week. I don't know about this Parents Plus loan. Do you know about that?
Yes, it's a long-time program that, you know, federal student loans are limited, and some are based, they're all based on need to a certain extent. Some are subsidized. Unsubsidized loans start accruing interest immediately. Subsidized federal student loans defer the interest until you graduate, 6 months after you graduate. But those are student loans, and they're not enough to pay anywhere near for most educations unless you're going to community college.
So more and more parents,
borrowing.
All right, so the statistics here. 2011-2012 school year, borrowers from Parents Plus made up 19.9% of the federal student loan borrowers, so of the in the bigger umbrella. That's a 385% jump from 1989, when the loan participation was just 4.1%. Average balances have gone from, in 1989, $15,000 to $40,000 in the year 2011-2012. So many more parents are taking out these loans, and the loans they're taking out are bigger than ever before.
And this is a problem, one that longtime readers know I've been talking about forever. There's no limit basically, as long as you have just basically reasonable credit on federal parental loans. These are not student loans. This is directly a parental loan from the government. They used to be at an outrageous interest cost of 8%, and years before that, even over 8%. Now they have a fixed interest rate of 6.41%. Okay, the interest is not deductible. The interest starts accruing, plus there's a 4% fee that's charged on each disbursement check of the loan. So this is a very expensive way to pay for your child's college education, and it becomes your problem, and presumably parents who are in their 40s or 50s, maybe even with kids in college, should be looking to fund their own retirements as opposed to their children's college education, unless they think that education is so good their kids are going to make enough money to take care of them in their old age.
And let me tell you something, it's not. In the fiscal year 2013, 17% of these PLUS loans were held by borrowers between 65 and 74. So you're in your 70s or late 60s, and you're still paying off student loans for your kids. I understand, you know, and I'm in it right now. I've got one child in college and another one with his foot in the door, and we want to do all we can. So it's hard to pull back and worry about your own retirement when you're looking at the debt that your kids might incur.
Okay, let me make three quick points. Number one, and I've been saying this in my columns for 15, 20 years since I saw this happening. What you want if you have kids in high school today is to tell them they're going to live at home. I know you hate it. They hate it. You hate it worse. For the first 2 years and go to community college. Yeah. It will save a fortune. Number two, you can refinance PLUS loans. I've talked about this before. There's a wonderful website called SoFi, S-O-F-I, stands for Social Finance, SoFi.com. You can refinance federal student loans. PLUS loans, that is, separately from your students' federal student loans. And finally, just recognize that this is a burden that becomes yours. Again, you're destroying your own retirement. It's time to understand that your kids are being taught by student teaching assistants. They're getting a wonderful experience in socialism in college. And there must be a better way that you can direct them, starting in high school, to A, get more scholarship money, scholarship. Scholarships.com. B, think about where they're going to school. It's easy to say, I can't afford it, and compare the student aid that you get from different schools and advocate for more. And finally, just be prepared to say no. You can't afford 4 years at that university, start at home in a community college.
Hey, a little socialism in college never hurt anyone, Terry Savage. Will you hang on for a second?
You do not believe it, but way back in the dark ages, I was one of those people. I definitely was. But now I'm more appalled than ever about what the political tax is in college.
That's not you I see in the background of those Bernie Sanders pictures being arrested at the University of Chicago, is it?
No, because I was,
you were a baby
at
then.
The University of Michigan, but we protested there too.
Hang on a sec.
It's fine to be that when you're in college, but we really need to make sure our kids are prepared for careers in the real life.
Yeah,
that's the most important thing a parent can do.
I want to take a quick break, come back and talk with you about financial advisors and how to keep an eye on them. Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WG. And Scott Kleinberg is in the studio. He comes by a couple times a week, writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Scott, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Steve.
Let's start in Brussels because, okay, obviously when something like this happens, and I know Facebook had opened up that thing that they do to allow people to check in.
Yes, very important.
And there was talk that the cellular service had been shut down by the police yesterday.
Yep.
But it also was sort of, the data was overwhelmed, wasn't it?
Yeah. The police actually are asking people, and they're still doing it today, asking people to use Wi-Fi whenever possible and try not to use the cell service because they're trying to use it, too, for important emergency things, and people are overwhelming it. They're streaming video. They're trying to show the outside world what's going on from their perspective, which is what we do now.
Sure.
We periscope everything. We do all this stuff, and it's becoming problematic because, you know, on one hand, you get people looking for loved ones. You get people trying to do all kinds of things, and you're overwhelming the networks. And it's not that hard to overwhelm them.
So it's the cellular networks we're concerned about here.
Yes. So Wi-Fi,
everything's golden.
Right. Okay. But, you know, going in there and finding Wi-Fi and going through all that when it's easier just to take out your phone and use it, that's the issue.
And the advisory continues there today.
Yeah.
Let's go to Facebook because there's always changes, always things to talk about there. And I didn't realize, is it a big issue that people are sort of pirating identities on Facebook?
You know, I don't know if I could quantify it in terms of big, but I have received emails from, I want to say, 5-10 people that this kind of thing has happened. And it's really as creepy as it sounds.
It is creepy.
It's someone who takes a photo, usually someone who takes a photo from your photo album, flips it upside down, puts it in as the photo so as not to repeat the same photo, and then puts your name and takes all of your information and then starts to send messages to friends.
Wait a minute. So let's say that again. So they flip the photo. Why do they flip the photo?
I think they want to make it so it doesn't look immediate that it's you. They want to make it so there's just a little bit of difference if someone reports it, like to give Facebook a little extra work, I think is what it was.
And then they pretend to be you.
Yeah.
And they pretend to be you with your friends or with
friends, with public. Sometimes they will copy a link that you post and post it as them and then add a spam link or something next to it. I mean, these are really, I mean, it's automated yet manual. It's very, very smart.
I don't know why, but I'm thinking of the movie Play Misty for Me. So it's like that kind of gives me that kind of creepy feeling or something.
Well,
but they're making it easier to stop this.
They're making it easier to stop it. They're coming out. They've already started working on a program, and it's actually available like 75% of the world where they will let you know if they sense somebody is impersonating your account. I did not know until I found this that that was even in testing. And I think that is a really, really great thing because even like you're saying, even if it's not a huge widespread thing, just the fact that you have to worry about that happening, if they can take one step to make it from happening, I think that's great.
It's funny because I think people ran into that with Twitter quite a bit, right? Where people would take names and pretend to be a celebrity or something.
And that still happens. And even if it's not a celebrity, it's just a regular person. That happens all the time. And Twitter is notorious for when you report something like that saying, oh, this is no problem. This is a parody or this is not in violation. And it's like, they're pretending to be me. It's impersonation.
Right.
There's a whole different form for that. And they're like, oh, you can do this and do this to prove your identity. That's one of the that's where Twitter really falls behind.
That's
the complaints
bad.
People have. That's a bad one.
And that's why you've got a lot of people who are verified, right?
Oh, yeah. The verified checkmark, you know, it used to help more when just the right number of people were verified. Now, I mean, I don't even know how they do it, but it has something to do with buying ads. There's all kinds of reasons why you can become verified. So I think that kind of lost some of its staying power.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't hurt, say the least.
I'm verified, so I still think it's a really big deal.
Well, I'm verified, too.
And you know, I think you're a big deal.
I wear my thank you.
What's wrong?
I wear my check mark with honor.
Facebook and BlackBerry, they're getting a breakup finally.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to stop supporting BlackBerry, the BlackBerry
Does anyone support BlackBerry?
I mean, that is the key right there. You know, for all the times that they want to hang on, and, you know, they have a new device that goes back to the old-style devices and trying to get the legacy users to enjoy it because of the keyboard. You know, all the things that make BlackBerry cool, or used to make BlackBerry cool, Facebook is finally realizing, you know what, this isn't
right.
Where we need to
and
be.
And it's still limping along, but it's not going away. But
yeah, I don't think it's going away, but I think when a player like Facebook says, okay, that's it, we're done, thanks,
fast, I don't know, is it not fast? I remember a picture of President Obama on the South Side at one of his daughter's soccer games.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked about how he was a crackberry or whatever, and
he would pull the
BlackBerry out of his pocket. That was 8 years ago.
Yeah, and I still think there are plenty of people who use it now, but that's it too. You know, 8 years in this world is a long, long time.
And now we're all walking up and down Michigan Avenue or State Street or wherever with our nose. I walked through the lobby of the Tribune yesterday.
Okay.
And this isn't quite where I'm headed, but there were 10 people in the lobby doing different things, walking through, standing, waiting. 8 of them were looking at their phone. 8 of the 10 people were looking at their phone.
I believe it.
A lot of us do that while we walk down the street, much to the consternation of everyone else.
Yes.
In New Jersey, they've decided it's dangerous, so they're going to pass a law.
They want to pass a law that would make it so if you are walking and texting, another form of distracted movement, I guess, you know, there'll be a fine that goes along with it. And they're pretty strict now, you know, in terms of driving and doing that kind of, and that should be. But, you know, whether or not you can actually police something like that, I'd like to see how that actually works.
Well, it comes from a sad story, right? This legislator who's proposed it, I think she knew someone, or it involves the story of someone who was actually texting while walking
and hit by a bus
and walked into traffic.
Yeah.
which is not comical, but it's the sort of thing that you see a lot of jokes about things like that.
It is the sort of thing, and I'll tell you what, I walk through the loop a lot, and I've seen people walk into the street when lights are changing yellow, and you know they technically can't make it or shouldn't make it, and right. they're walking, and they don't care. I mean, they just wait for someone to just stop, and it's a terrible
thing. Right, but they're doing that without the phone.
Well, and yes, but in some cases they're doing it with the phone, and it's terrible.
So we'll see how that goes in New Jersey. I cannot imagine that Governor Christie would sign a bill like that.
I kind of see Governor Christie being someone who does that, too. I'm having a hard time picturing him not texting and walking.
You know, I live in a neighborhood. I don't know why this is, but there are a few guys in my neighborhood who walk down the street reading the newspaper.
Oh, I've seen that, too. I've seen people reading hardcover books walking down one hand like this.
Oh, I just don't get it at all. But I see guys, one of them is a friend of mine, and I'll see Doug walking down the street, and he's got the newspaper on a Sunday walking around. Now, I would imagine if the New Jersey legislator is concerned, but that would have to be illegal, too.
I guess it would be. But,
All right, I want to squeeze in a couple more while you're here.
Okay.
I don't know why, but you always seem to bring in a Starbucks story.
Because Starbucks stories do really, really well on social media. They're always trending.
And this time, the Starbucks is being sued because there's not enough cafe latte in the cafe latte.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. These people who are suing are saying that, you know, your tall cup is 12 ounces, your grande is 16, your venti is 20, and that the liquid in there does not meet those specifications. So What they technically want, according to this lawsuit, is they want the liquid to go to the top. The reason why they don't put it to the top is because when you put the cover on, of course the liquid is going to spill over, because this is physics. It's going to spill over the cup and it's going to burn you. So they're saying, well, you know what, you're shying us an ounce or two, and if you do that every day and millions of drinks, you know. I mean, but there's so many different things with Starbucks. There's certain drinks that have foam at the top, and it's not supposed to go to the top. So there's a million different reasons why you might not get that exact amount.
So I'm on this Mincing Rascals podcast with John Williams and Eric Zorn and Krista McQuarrie.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually it goes up on Friday, so we'll do another one tomorrow. But I proposed a couple of weeks ago there should be that stupid tribunal in this country. Forget about the Supreme Court. Just that stupid. And you can only bring two or three things to it a year, you know, because you don't want to abuse it.
Right.
But this one I would bring to the court. Like, you know what? This is stupid.
Yeah.
Stop suing and go away.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that.
I had said earlier that we're going to talk about Pope Francis and his Instagram account just because it's Holy Week. And,
oh, yeah.
Wow. He's got quite a number of followers there.
He only has 7 posts so far and 1.9 million followers as of this morning. So he's on the heels of 2 million.
He should sell some spots on that. He could cash in on that a little bit.
He really should, yes.
Scott Kleinberg, it's Wednesday. We'll see you again later this week.
Sounds good, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.
Hi, Sharks. My name is Mike Doyle, and I'm the CEO of Rent Like a Champion.
And I'm Drew Mitchell, the co-founder of Rent Like a Champion. Sharks, we're here today to ask you for $200,000 in exchange for 10% of our business.
That's Mike Doyle, the CEO of Rent Like a Champion, and he's on a phone line now with us. Mike, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me, Steve.
You got that $200,000, didn't you?
We did get the $200,000. Yeah, we were fortunate enough to get a couple of the sharks to bite.
Now, I'm sure that you want to talk about your company, but I just love the fact that you were an intern in 2010 and the CEO in 2015.
See, the rags to riches story, I guess
it is.
Like that, huh?
Well, tell me about the company. I know that if people watch Shark Tank, they're familiar with it, but the idea is that you make rooms available basically in college football towns for people who want to come in to see the game.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So essentially, you know, in towns like South Bend, Indiana, Ann Arbor, Michigan, Oxford, Mississippi, you know, there's oftentimes hotel space for maybe 10 to 15,000 people, but on football weekends, graduation weekends, reunion weekends, these other huge events that they have throughout the year, there's sometimes 50-plus thousand people coming into town. So there's this big mismatch in supply and demand. And what we do is we get homeowners who live in these towns, sometimes professors and grad students who live near campus, to put their homes on our site, and then we turn around and rent those homes to the football fans, families coming in for the weekends.
Is that a good idea for an English lit professor to unleash his home on Penn State fans?
Yeah, you know, it actually is. It's a really great way for people who live in these college towns to make some pretty good money. Our homeowners, on average, are making more than $1,000 per weekend.
Wow.
You know, to leave their house for 48 hours. And it's funny, a lot of the folks that we talk to who live in these towns, they've been there long enough that I guess they're kind of over the pageantry of the football weekend, and they'd really rather just kind of escape town rather than deal with the crowds and the traffic.
It's like leaving New Orleans on Mardi Gras, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. We're giving them a chance to do that and make money at the same time. So it's really taken off in a lot of these towns.
All right, so when I hear this, I think Airbnb. And then my second thought is that, well, if Airbnb is so big, why is there room for Rent Like a Champion?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this market of peer-to-peer rentals really, you know, 10 years ago did not exist, and it's just been growing like a weed ever since. And what we found is that a lot of the towns where we operate, these smaller college towns that we kind of consider non-traditional vacation rental destinations, they don't have – there's not a huge presence from our competitors. You know, other companies that maybe do vacation rentals are more focused on a city like Chicago or
right.
a beach town like Miami. And if you're trying to go to South Bend, there may not be a lot of inventory on some of these other traditional vacation rental sites.
Are you telling me there's not a demand to vacation in Bloomington, Indiana?
Well, a couple weekends a year there is, for sure. But outside of that, you know, I don't know if there's like a regular flock going there.
All right, so you started at Notre Dame, I know, and it was your idea to go to Penn State and start to expand it. How many towns are you in now?
There's about 25 college towns where we have a pretty strong presence. It's really a lot of the big time college football programs that you know people would think of when they think of college football. So, you mentioned Penn State, Michigan, Ole Miss, Florida State, Georgia, Clemson, Auburn, Alabama. Those type of schools where it tends to work the best is when there's this rabid fan base of football fans, and they're coming back to what's typically a smaller town. That's where we've seen the most success.
Here we are in the NCAA tournament. That NCAA basketball doesn't really apply, does it? Because there are more games, and people don't really travel to go see games, college basketball games.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we've done a few. We do some rentals for basketball games, but you kind of hit it on the head there. You know, the stadiums just aren't as big. Football, it's really football games are always on a Saturday. So it sets itself up really nicely to just make a weekend of it. If there's a game in Champaign on a Tuesday night, there's probably not a lot of people driving 3 or 4 hours to go to the game just because it's not quite as convenient as a football weekend.
Mike Doyle is the CEO of Rent Like a Champion. You can see it at rentlikeachampion.com. All right, so we know where you are now. What's next? How big do you want to be?
We really want to have a presence, a big-time presence, in every single college football town around the country. So we've identified 40 towns where we think our model makes a lot of sense. So we still have a lot of green space within the college football arena. And then we're actually, too early to reveal kind of what's
no, it's not,
where
Mike.
We're going next.
No, it's not. You can do it right here, Mike.
There you go. We're looking at some new verticals. So essentially we want to take the model that we've built out, in essence, big events that happen in small towns and drop it into new things like, PGA events, NASCAR races. There's a couple opportunities that we've been approached about that we're really excited about. And, that'll do a couple things. It'll allow us to grow hopefully more quickly and then, kind of level out the seasonality of a lot of your business coming in, 3 or 4 months of the fall.
I like that. Now, we've only got 30 seconds. A little different there in that if it's in the PGA or whatever, you're not week after week or every week after week, so it's a little more one hit and you're done sort of model, right?
Sure. Yeah, exactly. So that's what, we try to find places that have events throughout the year so we can get a lot of use out of any inventory that we sign up.
All right, Mike, when you want to make news, just come back, okay?
That sounds great. Thanks a lot for having me.
You bet. Mike Doyle is the CEO of RentLikeAChampion.com. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.